Now, today we're going to look at an event that happened in Mark, the fifth chapter. Begins at verse 1, reads down through verse 20, and we'll read that in just a minute. But we need to, I think, focus on at least three different people that Jesus interacted with. First, there is the man who is possessed by demons. Secondly, there is that man after he is freed from those demons. And then the third is the owner of the pigs. So we're going to talk a little bit about those three people this morning. Well, let's just read Mark, the fifth chapter, beginning at verse 1. This is from the American Standard Translation. We're going to read a long reading here, but it's important. They came to the other side of the sea. That would have been the Sea of Galilee, into the country of the Gerasenes. Now, some translations say it's the Gadarenes. There were two cities in that region. One was called Gadara, the other one was called Gera. And it's probably true that either one of those cities could have been taken as the principal city of that area, and it would have been called the area of the Gadarenes, or it would have been called the area of the Gerasenes. It just depends on which city you're talking about. So he gets out of the boat. Immediately, a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. He had been dwelling among the tombs. Now, this area, and I have never been there. I was hoping that Mark was still here. He's been to the Sea of Galilee. He might be able to describe this a little bit for us. But this area is surrounded by very, very steep cliffs. If you've seen the White Cliffs of Dover, it's kind of like that. So this area is surrounded by cliffs, and into the caves that were in those cliffs, they had made tombs. That's where they would bury people. This man has been living in those tombs. He has an unclean spirit. No one, it says, had been able to bind this man anymore, even with a chain, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been torn apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. Constantly, night and day, he was screaming among the tombs and in the mountains and gashing himself with stones. Seeing Jesus from a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him, and shouting with a loud voice, he said, "What business do we have to do with each, or do we have with each other, Jesus, Son of God Most High? I implore you by God, do not torment me." Apparently, Jesus had been saying for at least some time prior to this man coming up to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And that was an understanding that I had missed when I read this before. Jesus had been talking to this spirit before the man came up to Jesus. He was asking him, "What's your name?" He said to him, and I think that's when it says he said, I think that's the spirit said this. He said, "My name is Legion. We're many." They probably used the man's voice to say that. He began to implore him earnestly not to send him out of the country. Now, there was a large herd of swine feeding nearby on the mountain, and the demons implored him, saying, "Send us into the swine so that we may enter them." Jesus gave them permission. Coming out, the unclean spirits entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea, about 2,000 of them, and they drowned in the sea. Their herdsmen ran away and reported it in the city and in the country. Now, it's a little surprising that in a Jewish area you would find herds of swine. Understand that this area was under Roman control. And from what I can read, there was a garrison of Romans that were stationed in this area. And the Jews would keep the swine, not so that they could eat them, but they would tend the swine so that they could sell them as provisions to the Romans. So this is a source of profit for them. The people came to see what it was that had happened. They came to Jesus. They observed the man who had been demon-possessed sitting down, clothed in his right mind, the very man who had the legion, and they became frightened. Those who had seen it described to them how it had happened to the demon-possessed man and all about the swine, and they began to implore him to leave their region. They wanted Jesus to leave because of what had happened to the herd of swine. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed was imploring him that he might accompany him. He did not let him, but he said to him, "Go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you." He went away and began to proclaim in Decapolis what great things Jesus had done for him, and everyone was amazed. Decapolis is a word that refers to the fact that there were 10 towns in this region, and so this region is called the Decapolis. So this man, rather than accompanying Jesus, is sent back to tell people what has happened to him. Now, let's reflect on some of the things that are here in this chapter. Jesus knew that people could be captives of sin, that they could be taken captive by evil. And this was a man that was captive of evil. Kind of like the man who was in the synagogue in Capernaum. Sometimes we look at people who are captive of evil and we think you've brought it on yourself. And many times sin is like that. We bring the effects of sin on ourselves. But not always. And we shouldn't be so quick to assume that that was the case for this man. You know, in John the ninth chapter, Jesus encountered the man who was born blind. And the disciples asked Jesus, "Who sinned? Was it this man or his parents that he was born blind?" It's as if this man had to bring something upon himself. When Job had to deal with terrible misfortune that we know was created by Satan, what did his friends say? "Fess up, Job. What did you do?" Nobody suffers this way unless they brought it on themselves. And they were wrong. You know how I know that they were wrong? In Matthew, the 17th chapter, we read about another case where a demon possessed an individual. In this case, it was a young boy. We're not talking about somebody who is bringing this upon himself, this captivity. He's a child. He didn't bring this on himself. His father said, oftentimes this spirit that has taken him throws him into the fire. Jesus knew that people could be taken captive. In this case, it was a person who was taken captive against his will. We don't see that anymore. But we do see people today who are captives of evil. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we draw some implications for us today. But at this point, understand Jesus knows that people can become captives of evil. And he knows that their captivity to sin can make them truly scary. And this was such a man. Nobody had been able to bind him. Apparently, this man was a wild man. It's not the case of somebody who's just different. We talked about that last week. We talked about how the Jews wouldn't have anything to do with the Samaritans because they were different, and they wouldn't go through Samaria if they traveled from Jerusalem up to Galilee because they didn't want to be around people that were different. This is not somebody who's just different. Somebody that we might shun just because of their difference. This is not that kind of person. This is a person who really is scary. And Jesus didn't run away from him. In fact, he went there. Now, there's not as much discussion about whether he went there on purpose or not. He's just moving across the lake. But I do know that Jesus didn't run away from him when he encountered him. Jesus cast out that which held him captive. That was the case in this case. He defeated this man's demons, and what that allowed this man to do was be with Jesus. And the description of him is he was sitting clothed in his right mind. You can be released from sin. And that's what Jesus did for this man. Jesus released this man from the evil that beset him. And when he did that, the man was clothed and in his right mind. It's as if there are two individuals. One who's a captive of sin, and the second person who is freed from that sin. Almost as if they're unrecognizable. And then there's this third group. Those who resented the freedom that Jesus gave. Jesus faced them as well. The swine keepers, the herdsmen that were with the swine, they saw the swine running down this cliff, falling headlong into the sea and drowning, and they're immediately concerned that they're going to be blamed for losing all of these critters. So they run to town to tell their side of the story. Because they know the people that owned the swine. They're not the owners. They're just people that are taking care of them. The owners are going to be mad that their profit is gone. These swine owners worried that they would lose their source of profit. Or no, really not much different than other people who resented the freedoms that Jesus gave. Remember the Sabbath-keeping critics? Matthew, the first or the 12th chapter. Jesus heals a man on the Sabbath, and they're worried that he healed a man on the Sabbath. They've missed the point. Jesus healed the man. Jesus is rejected. They want him to leave. Unlike what we saw last week when we talked about the Samaritans, they asked him to come to their town and he stayed there 2 days and many believed on him because of his teaching. These people didn't want anything to do with Jesus because he was doing good. I'm reminded of the army that came out to take Jesus when he was in the garden after he'd been betrayed. The first thing they did was bind his hands. And that amazes me. What were they afraid of? That he healed somebody else? The last thing Jesus did with his hands was he picked up the servant of the high priest's ear and he put it back on after Peter had severed it with his sword. And they're worried that Jesus is going to heal somebody, so they bound his hands. Yeah, that's the way people get sometimes. They're profiteers. They profit off of sin, and they don't want people to offer freedom. This freed man wanted to go with Jesus. What did Jesus tell him? No, don't go with me. Go back. Tell those people that you meet what's happened to you. Sometimes we're called upon to serve in a place that's not particularly godly. Well, that was this man. He spread the news throughout the Decapolis. People worked with Jesus. If you read the end of Mark, the fourth chapter, one of the reasons that Jesus had left the area, and we saw it last week as well, he was doing things and people were getting angry about it. His disciples were baptizing people, and the record says that Jesus was baptizing people. People were working with Jesus. What's it mean for us? Well, we're never going to encounter, I don't believe, people who are held captive by Satan against their will. We could talk about demon possession, and we could spend a couple of weeks talking about demon possession, how it was very real. It was something that happened, but it was something that was going to come to an end. Remember what the legion said to Jesus? Why are you come to torment us before the time? You see that in some of the other records, and particularly the records that we saw in Matthew and Luke. There was a time when this was going to come to an end. And it did. Satan has been bound. That's one of the ways that Satan is bound. He can't do that anymore. He can't. It's also true that he can't deceive people anymore, telling them there is no sacrifice because Jesus made the sacrifice. So now Satan's biggest argument is taken away. There is a sacrifice. We're not going to encounter people that are like that, but we are going to encounter people who are sin's captives. Sin still gains control of us when we think the situation is hopeless. Think about the drug addict who can't see a way out of addiction. He's held captive by the addiction. Think about the young lady who is pregnant, who can't see a way out of her situation. And so she decides to have an abortion. I don't know if you've encountered people that are like that. People who, because of their situation and the hopelessness that they're facing, lash out, strike out at everybody around them. People are still captives of sin, not demon possession. And we sometimes talk about it as if they're dealing with their demons. I understand the nature of language, but let's be careful. They're still captives of sin. And what we need to do is give that captive hope. The hope that Jesus gives. Now, Jesus cast out the demon. For us today, Jesus is still the answer to hopelessness and hopeless situations that people can't see their way out of. Jesus is the one who will release them, and we can give them that hope. It doesn't do any good for us to remind them that they're captives of sin without giving them hope. And then there are those who profit from the captives. The drug dealers, the cartels that import horrible drugs into our country, the opiates that so take people captive, and they will get mad if you try to help those people find relief. They'll kill you. Those who traffic children, who sell them into awful sex slavery, they will kill you if you try to free those children. And it makes me mad. You know, it's like what the apostles faced in Acts the 16th chapter, Acts the 19th chapter. Remember the woman who is possessed by a spirit of divination? And the apostles cast out that spirit. And those who profited from her captivity to sin then caused a riot in the city of Ephesus. And they said, if we don't do something about these people, our source of profit is gone. That makes me so angry. And I know it makes other people angry. And we want to stop those people from profiting off of the suffering of those that are captive to awful hopelessness. And sometimes my anger with those people can prevent me from seeing that the people that I can help are the captives. I get angry at the drug cartels. And I think we need to work to establish some kind of law that will prevent them from doing what they do. And I spend my time, I devote my effort to doing that as God's work. And I forget there's somebody that's held captive. I get angry at the trans industry, the doctors and nurses who perceive gender-affirming care as a way to make money. And they don't want that to stop. It makes me so angry. But I forget that there are people who are hurting, who find themselves in a helpless situation. And I overlook them. That's the person that Jesus devoted his attention to. So don't get caught up fighting against the profiteers and ignore those people that are hurting. Now, I can be with Jesus. I can do the kind of work he was doing. But I'm going to have to think about it. I'm going to have to give it some careful consideration. What may be that you're in a position that you think is hopeless. It may be that you're in a position from which you don't see any release. I'm here to tell you, Jesus will free you from that. It won't be easy, but Jesus will free you from that. You know, there's a reason why baptism is called a death. When you put on Jesus, you're putting the old man to death. And that old man is going to fight tooth and nail to not be put to death. So we talk about baptism as being such an easy thing. It's not. It's putting the old man to death. If you want to do that, we'll stand with you. We'll help you get through that. And if you've begun to live your life for Jesus and the old hopelessness returned, we'll help you to work through that as well. Repent, pray, walk with Jesus again. We'll help you to do that. But we want you to think about it.